Okay, our third case is number 18-1332, Mantis Communications, LLC versus Edible Arrangements, LLC. Ms. Klamrowski.
May it please the Court, good afternoon, Your Honors. The question before this Court today is primarily one of civil procedure. On February 8th, 2018,
Ms. Klamrowski, you ask us to adopt a construction, quote, a server system that can simultaneously support multiple mobile service providers' systems and mobile device technology, correct?
Correct, yes.
Isn't that the language of the preferred embodiment? Column 10, lines 2 to 4, if that helps you.
In the 788 patent?
Hmm?
Yes, Your Honor.
So are you asking us to construe message application server in terms of a preferred embodiment? You realize that's contrary to our precedent.
Yes, Your Honor.
So your answer is yes, Your Honor? You are asking us to.
Well, yes, I realize it's contrary to your precedent.
Okay. You realize it is. Okay.
Your Honors, I would like to circle back to the reason why Mantis is here today. On February 8th, 2018, this court in Berkheimer versus HP, with respect to Alice Step 2, said, the question of whether a claim element or combination of elements is well understood, routine, and conventional to a skilled artisan is a genuine issue of material fact, making summary judgment inappropriate with respect to the claims.
Well, that's an overstatement of what the case said. It doesn't say that summary judgment is never appropriate. It says that sometimes it's not.
Correct, Your Honor. Yes,
but there can be factual questions. Not that there automatically are factual questions.
Correct, but we believe in this case there are factual questions that need to be resolved.
Do you think so, even if the decline to narrow the claim in the claim construction way you suggest, that is, if we say, look, it's we have to construe this claim to be as general as its language suggests, consistent with some language in the spec that says something, and I'm paraphrasing here, mm-hmm. any application server will do.
Mm-hmm. Well,
at that point, is there any legally material fact that about conventionality or non-abstractness?
The point is that Mantis was never given the ability to have claim construction conducted. The lower court made a ruling on claim construction without actually conducting claim construction. So Mantis would like this court to remand this case so it has the ability to demonstrate to the lower court that its claims are valid. Additionally, the lower court dismissed the factual allegations in Mantis's complaint. And it's a well-established standard.
Well, let me ask you this about factual allegations. You assert factual allegations that the, quote, trigger system, close quote, of Claim 1 solves a problem unique to mobile technology. That's in the blue brief of 15.
Yes, yes, Your Honor.
All your citations supporting those factual allegations present a turning argument at the trial level. I'm looking at JA-160 and 334 and 335. Where is there a factual allegation as well as opposed to a turning argument? You look at those pages in the record that you cited. In the blue brief at 15 and 16,
mm-hmm.
and then turn to the record which you've cited, and tell me how those are factual as opposed to attorney argument.
Could you repeat your question, Your Honor?
Repeat the question?
Yes.
Sure. In the blue brief at 15 and 16, mm-hmm. you say that the trigger system of Clay 1 solves a problem unique to mobile technology.
Right.
And then you cite alleged factual allegations. Okay. And you cite us to the record. But when I look at the record at JA16 or 334 and 335, those are attorney argument. I looked at it and thought, oh, is this an affidavit? No. It's a First Amended complaint.
Right.
How is that anything other than attorney argument? There's no factual statement.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm having trouble finding where you're referring to in our First Amendment complaint.
Do you have the record in front of you?
I have the complaint in front
of
me.
The appendix on appeal? Go to 334 and 335. Who is Mr. Hatch?
Mr. Hatch is the lead attorney for Mantis.
So you're citing to Mr. Hatch, are you not?
Yes, Your Honor.
Isn't that sort of prima facie attorney argument?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Do you get anything more out of the other site, the 160, which is the complaint, which at least formally is an allegation of fact? Which is, that's it, I think. The other site there is the appendix 160,
mm-hmm.
which, and this is not on a summary judgment motion, right? We're on,
right,
we're
motion
on 12b6,
to dismiss. So yes.
we have to take the facts as pled.
Right, correct.
As true. What are the facts on that page that you think serve you well here on this point?
Well, we walk through what the message application server does. The message application server is able to take a bunch of numbers across a bunch of different wireless carriers. Each carrier has a different service address, different protocols for sending and receiving messages. The message application server is able to take an inbound message from a user on any one of those wireless carriers and is able to then kick out a marketing message or, you know, whatever kind of message a business would want, no matter what carrier the user is on. So back when these patents were, back to the priority date of these patents in 2002, at that time there wasn't even interoperability between the wireless carriers. So if I was on Verizon, I wouldn't be able to text someone that was on T-Mobile. So the message application server at that time solved a problem unique to mobile technology that had not yet been solved.
We have a line of cases now that identify as one way a claim can be abstract,
mm-hmm.
that it is essentially functional. That is, it says, we need a device that performs the following function without further specificity. Why is that not essentially what's going on here, even whereas I think you have some other patent not asserted here that says here in more with greater particularity is a design of a server that does this. But if we construe this claim, mm-hmm. not only with respect to the trigger system, but the application server, to be as broad as I think the spec declares it to be. It says 106 is any server that will do this. Then why would this not fall into the line of cases, Affinity Labs and others now, that say if you are at too high a level of generality and just say a thing that performs this function, you're still in abstract territory?
Well, the spec says that the message application server is a piece of software, is designed to process messages. It's not just a generic piece of software. It's designed to send and receive messages across a bunch of different wireless carriers.
Let's look at step two.
Okay.
You claim unspecified generic computer components. Claim one appears to claim the abstract classic steps of direct marketing at a very high, as Judge Toronto said, a very high level of generality. That is, acquiring individual contact information, sending promotional material, and allowing the redemption of that material. What are the meaningful limitations in Claim 1 such that it contains an inventive concept?
Well, we believe that the message application server demonstrates the inventive concept, that the ability of the message application server to interface with these different carriers, that is the inventive concept of the trigger system.
How does it do that?
Well, it's able to take, so carriers might send messages out with a 5-digit short code, a 6-digit short code, a 7 or 10-digit number. The message application server is able to take whatever number is associated with a specific carrier, and then it's able to configure that address to then communicate directly one-to-one with the user on a carrier.
How is that innovative?
It's innovative because at the time these patents were, the priority date of these patents, there wasn't any interoperability between the carriers. This simply wasn't done. You couldn't text someone that was on a different wireless carrier than yourself.
Yeah, but you admit that that's not, under our jurisprudence, appropriate part of the claim, because that's only an embodiment.
Yes, but if Mantis was allowed to have an actual claim construction hearing and to import limitations from the specification to construe these elements of the claim, then it believes that it could demonstrate to the lower court that its claims are patent eligible. But the issue here is that Mantis was never given that opportunity. The lower court simply said, well, we don't like your claims, so we're granting the appellee's motion to dismiss. And all Mantis wants is the ability to have a claim construction hearing, the ability to show the lower court, and it thinks it can show the lower court, that its claims are patent eligible.
Okay, do you want to save the rest of your time?
Yes.
Mr. Conrad.
May it please the court.
Well, given the disputed construction of message application server, wasn't the district court compelled to engage in meaningful claim construction?
It was and it did, Your Honor.
Is Mantis's offered construction of message application server plausible?
It is not plausible. And the fact that you jumped right on to the point is that the district court did engage in claim construction, even if it was at an earlier stage than ordinarily they're administered in cases. That's up to the judge to decide that there's enough on the record to do that. And here he did. Judge Payne did construe the term and decide that the proposed claim construction, which was a proposal from the plaintiff, was not supported by the intrinsic record. There was an attempt to read a particular embodiment from the specification into
the claims. We discussed that, of course.
And the reason that it's not even something, it's not even all embodiments, it's just a particular embodiment, is because this wasn't even in a focus of the patent. If you read the specification, it becomes clear that the message application server was not even suggested to be an invention in this patent. On appendix page 32, column 9, starting around line 45, the specification says that multiple other embodiments of the message application server are possible and known to those skilled in the art. So in the intrinsic record, when the applicants talked about how this, the details of this, the mobile provider network was not even important or not even relevant, that's because they weren't even trying to claim this as an invention. And so the thought that that the court should narrow the claims based on this one term, and then this would actually turn the issue of eligibility into the plaintiff's favor, is just not plausible from the record. What the applicants claim to invent here is a trigger system. That was the focus of the patent. That was the title of the patent. The problem that was discussed that they were faced with was, how do we get a mobile number from a user? We don't like the technical ways that was being done. How do we get a mobile number from the user? And they said, let's come up with a trigger system. The problem with the patent, even if you want to set aside the message application server and just look at the trigger system, the trigger server is going to use any means possible to accomplish that fact. That's expressly stated in the patent, that the trigger system is any system capable of capturing a unique identifier capable of being transformed into the user mobile device address. And it says that that unique identifier could simply be the user's mobile address to begin with. And so the patent itself, whether you want to accept the procedural arguments that the plaintiff is presenting on appeal, or if you want to look at the patent the way the patentees wanted to tell the public what their invention was, either way, you can accept one of two different line of cases. As Judge Taranto, you mentioned, you can accept the case law where if you look at the message application server, it's just a functional component and doesn't actually claim any specific way of doing anything. You look at the other line of cases and you look at the trigger system and the other components, and the patentees say they could be anything that accomplish this goal. And the breadth that is admitted to in the patent here is so broad that it's hard to find a patent that is this similar in its express nature of claiming breadth. You have to go back to O'Reilly v. Morris, where it expressly says, I claim any way of doing something. It's rare to find something so expressly stated in the patents like this. So the district court did what it was supposed to do. It looked at these patents. There was a claim construction argument that was raised by the plaintiff. It resolved the claim construction argument properly. Then it addressed the Alice, step one and step two, and said that the claims here were claiming so broad a means that it effectively covered all means of accomplishing what the patentees wanted to do, and therefore it was abstract. And then when it went to step two, it said there's nothing in this patent that would save it. There's no specific inventive means that they came up with to solve the problem. And therefore, the district court correctly granted the motion to dismiss, and we politely ask this court to affirm. I'm happy to answer questions if you have any.
I don't think we have any. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Conrad. Mr. Komrowski.
I would just like to point out that in the August 11th hearing on the motion to dismiss, counsel for the appellees actually admitted that Mantis's claim construction was plausible. So for them to say and to deny that Mantis's claim construction is plausible goes against expressly what they stated.
What are you citing?
It's the trial transcript. Sorry, Your Honor, I can't find the site.
That doesn't help us.
But it was admitted in the trial transcript.
We should take your word for it.
I'm sorry?
We should take your word for it?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, with just a minute left, I want to reiterate that Mantis did not get a fair hearing on claim construction from the lower court. Despite what the appellees have said, The lower court made a ruling saying that there was no basis for imparting any limitations from the spec to the claims, and that in and of itself is a claim construction ruling, and that issue, whether to impart limitations from the spec, is the very purpose of claim construction. And there was no formal claim construction conducted here. There was no evidence put forth by the defendant. They didn't meet the clear and convincing standard under Accenture to show that their construction was the only plausible one that made the claims patent ineligible. My time's up, Your Honors.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Klimarowski. Thank both counsel. The case is submitted.